Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Big show in hour two. Good guest, Heather Denich coming on. ESPN.com. I have used the word embedded when it comes to the college football playoffs and everything that goes on with the voting, the procedures, and just the whole process out in Dallas. Heather Denich, she's embedded. She knows as much as anyone covering college football about what's going on with the playoffs. We'll talk that and some other things, because I know some people get tired of talking, playoff expansion, just tell me when it is. And there's some reasonableness in that opinion. But there's also speculation is fun about big-time sand-shifting changes. That's why conference realignment and expansion, that's why it's so much fun. And it's not just fun for Alabama. In fact, it's a little like Alabama, that level, the best teams, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Hang on. What? If you are on the lower rungs of the ladder, more money and more difficult for us to win. And we'll win anyway. There's all kinds of different opinions, but everybody likes talking about it. College football playoffs, it's a big enough, again, sand-shifting, earth-moving sort of change. We will talk with Heather in about 10 minutes. And bottom of the hour, good friend of ours, ESPN Jackson, he's the afternoon host there. He's on, I'm on before him, then I'm the warm-up act. And then Jake Wimberly comes on. So always love catching up with Jake, and that will be the bottom of the hour. Right now, I'm going to get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football, every single day. This is CFB 365, presented by Ecoderm. Text Ecoderm to 31996 now for your free sample of Ecoderm Pain Relief Cream and CBD from Frank Thomas. Text ECODERM to 31996 now.
Headline, Buckeyes hit portal for transfer kicker. That would be North Carolina, former North Carolina junior kicker Noah Ruggles. Three seasons in Chapel Hill, decided to hit the portal, and wow, talk about trading up. North Carolina, 3 years. There's a chance he graduated. I don't know that. It's a pretty good place to have a diploma from, North Carolina. But Ohio State is going to be his new home, and he has up to two seasons of eligibility remaining. He has played a lot, but then not played some, and he's been really good on PATs, almost perfect, as a matter of fact. Actually, 48 of 48. That's pretty perfect. And inside 40, he's got good accuracy on field goals. And so that's you know what? I won't say it's a weapon, but it's another box you check. When you got – there are certain positions, short yardage fullback, and as a blocker, short yardage tight end, long snapper holder. There are – folks, I'm not kidding, like eight positions on the field – where you may not even contribute in a full role for that position, like short yardage fullback. We don't even use a fullback on first and 10. Well, kicker. Well, am I the kicker? You're a kicker on short field goals and PATs because you're Mr. Automatic and you get a Buckeye on that one side of the helmet. So that's actually a nice little add there. Headline. Temple quarterback transfers to Georgia Tech. That would be Trad Beatty. Former Temple redshirt sophomore Trad Beatty announced via Twitter that he's going to reunite with the coach who recruited him at Temple, Jeff Collins, 6'5", 220 pounds. And he has had some injuries, some head injuries, actually, that has kind of had him on the shelf the past couple of seasons. And he has up to two seasons of eligibility remaining, and he can play immediately. Consider yourself up to date. I do want to give you one more quick note about something that I mentioned yesterday, and it was Luke McCaffrey, who is Ed McCaffrey's kid, and I guess younger brother of Christian McCaffrey. And he went to Nebraska, And he played some, and he got some yards and a couple of touchdowns, and there were a lot of turnovers. He's a quarterback. But he was the number four ranked dual threat quarterback in the entire class two classes ago. And he goes to Nebraska, and he was a redshirt freshman last year. And he decided that he wanted to transfer. Well, it's not going to work out in Nebraska in offense or cold weather. I don't care. So he transfers, and he goes to Louisville. Well, we found out why he transferred. I said, I don't care. Just let's see how it works out. If the kid was able to pick a place that satisfies whatever he was looking for, I don't care. Good for him. So let's see how it plays out. New place. Well, it didn't play out. He transfers to Louisville, was there, according to the head coach, Scott Satterfield, 3 or 4 days, and, quote, started working out Wednesday with the team, and then after the week, those 3 or 4 days, decided this wasn't a place for him. His big thing that he wanted to do was come in and play and be a starting quarterback, and I guess after 3 or 4 days, decided maybe that wasn't going to happen here. So on he goes. He wasn't happy for whatever reasons at Nebraska. We know now what his goal is, according to the Scott Satterfield, who was never really his coach, I guess. But he's now looking for another school, and he'll find another school. When you're the number four ranked dual threat quarterback in the entire high school class from 2 years ago, yeah, you're going to find us. Somebody's going to take you. And there'll be a lot of somebody's hoping to take him. But he's not moving ahead in this quest right now. Having your third school in 2 full years, that's not moving ahead. Actually, third school in 7 months, that's not moving ahead. You can still succeed, and I hope he does, and absolutely can have a really good career. God bless you, Luke McCaffrey. As of right now, a couple of false steps, and I know you're looking for the right one. I absolutely know that. But especially given your background, and the ability to look around and know, you know, what your personal boxes to check are. There are cases like this as well, a bunch of them, where you get to the reality, like Scott Satterfield, you still got to show up and compete. So he moves on, and again, he has a lot of company in this sort of scenario right now. All right, we're going to break, come back with Heather Denich next.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states, 51 sticks, dealing it out since the beginning of the 14th season. Appreciate everybody putting that blessing in my life. Let's head out now. ESPN.com, one of the heavy hitters when it comes to folks covering the sport of college football. I've used the word embedded to describe her coverage of the college football playoffs. It is Heather Denich. Heather, how are you?
I'm terrific. How are you?
Doing good. Let's get to it. Playoffs. How's it going to be, and when is it going to be announced?
Well, you know, I think the meetings next week in Chicago are going to be the most revealing, because regardless of what is reported between now and then, they've got to agree on it. And that will be the first time that they will be in person. When I say they, I mean the 10 FBS commissioners and Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick. They will be in a room together to hash this out. And while the working group is going to present what it thinks, does everyone else agree with them? If they do come to a consensus, then the following week they'll present it to the 11 presidents and chancellors, who are the people who actually have the power to change the playoff. And if they say, we like it, we like that model, then the commissioners will use the summer, this summer, to go figure out how to implement it. And then come next September, we could have the green light for a new format.
Heather Dinich, ESPN.com. All right, so the difference between 6 or 8, which I don't think are realistic considerations at this point, 12, 16, I don't know, 32. Besides how much more money separates the scenarios, what are the other variables, the factors?
Well, I think one of the big considerations in that meeting is going to be automatic qualifiers. You know, a lot of people assume that conference champions are going to be in, but you know, if you look at this past season, and Oregon, the Pac-12 champ, is sitting at number 25, are they one of the best teams in the country? You know, and it was an odd year. Granted, it was an odd year. But that's an example of all it takes is one upset in a game. I mean, if you have a 5-3 Georgia Tech beat Florida State, I mean, this is like, what, 2014, the first year of the playoff? And all of a sudden, you got a 3-loss Coastal Division team as one of your playoff teams, you know, so I'm sure there will be some pushback against automatic qualifiers, just like there was when it went from 2 to 4. So I think that's a very real part of the conversation.
Yeah, but did Oregon play Utah? Am I remembering correctly?
This past year?
Yeah. Or maybe it was 2. Whatever. We get into the weird scenarios where I remember it was the only way to get to the Rose Bowl was to get blown out. Because if you lost closely, then Utah would probably miss the playoffs and go to – this was 2 years ago. And so you get all these weird scenarios from last season, and that's absolutely one of them. Speaking of the weirdness from last year, I think it's a mistake to remind folks about COVID this fall. I think it's a mistake to and I know folks want to be diligent and responsible and help save lives and everything else, and I say that with all seriousness. I think it's a mistake to show how diligent you're being this year with sanitizer stations and offering masks and everything. And that may not be popular, but that's my opinion.
Why is that?
That I think that there is so much COVID fog and hangover, and if I wore a mask every day for 14 months, and my opinion was, if I trusted the science to do that, then I need to trust the science after I get my second shot. And at this point, I mean, if you've never heard of COVID, you can get 5 shots today. So I think it's going to be a mistake to overly emphasize COVID and protocols and everything going forward.
Okay. You switched gears on me there.
Yeah.
Just trying to connect the dots. But, yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I think this fall is going to look a lot more normal as far as games. I mean, I think that if they had already California – rest of the protocol in terms of passes and things like that. But in talking to people from coast to coast, that seems to be the one outlier, but they're all going to have to continue to follow those guidelines as far as the capacity. But most people I've talked to are planning for 100% they can do it.
All right, last thing for you, and I'll let you run. And you're right, full capacity, and I expect the stands, the attendance to kind of look very 2019. Because that's actually going to the game and watching the game. What about the Grove? What about Tiger Walk or Dog Walk or all the just fun social things that's not actually going through the turnstile? What about all the extra stuff? How do you expect those things to look?
I think it's going to be back to normal in terms of those things. You know, and I've talked with not athletic directors, but the associate athletic directors who are in charge of game day planning events and things. And they're trying to work out the minutiae of those details still and how vaccinations will continue to play a role in that and masks and all those things you're talking about. But I think bringing those traditions back that make college football every Saturday are going to return, and it's going to feel like it used to.
Well, your lips to college football God's ears. Heather, I appreciate it always. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks.
All right, Heather Dinich from ESPN.com. That was kind of an awesome moment. Pause. What do you mean? As in, like, maybe, wait a minute, am I dealing with a QAnon? Am I dealing with somebody who says COVID was just a hoax? I actually have a coworker. I'm not going to say this person's name. I'm not even going to give gender. I have a coworker who has a degree from a real university and has a master's from an SEC school. And he says he's wary that it was just about empowerment. So, no, that whole COVID thing was just about media empowerment. I'm like, I will shake hands with you now because I've had the second shot, but we're not going to have this conversation anymore. So I'm glad she asked me. I'm like, what do you mean? I was like, ah, okay. And that's kind of the whole, the big picture there is COVID hangover. And I'm going to say there are two camps here. And the latest number I saw was like 63% of the United States population has had at least one shot. So, if that number is accurate, there are essentially two groups of people. If you could divide every human in the United States into just two groups, you can't do male and female. All right, that works. Over age 30, below, sure, there are some that work. You've had your shot or both, or you haven't. At this point, there's not one person in this country who has been prevented from having a shot. And so while if you ask me, hey, is it a good idea? Well, yeah, it's a great idea. Get your shot. There are plenty of people who I'm not going to ask you. I don't care your opinion. And I respect that. The first group is apparently 63%, if you know Associated Press numbers are correctly, one shot or two. The second group is 37% who hasn't. That 37% right now, I'm going to say that there's always going to be outliers. I don't know. Maybe, you know, that lady from Misery has some author tied up in bed and is beating up his feet, and so he can't go get his COVID shot. I don't know. There's always going to be exceptions no matter what scenario you have. But for the most part, if you're in that 37%, it's because you are choosing to not get a shot. I actually spoke to a guy that I know and I've known for over a decade, and team chaplain for like professional sports teams all around pro sports, and I was about to give him away. So I don't know, he's like 65, and I met him for lunch about a month ago. He's like, I was like, hey, how you doing? I shook his hand. He's like, I can do that now. We had our shots. He's like, oh, I haven't had it. I'm not gonna. I was like, okay, well, let's have our lunch. And I didn't judge or anything, but he is in that 37% that right now he could go get five shots. I don't advise this, by the way. It's too much. Drive-throughs, no appointment. You have an ID? I told you, bag of shots, 99 vaccines for $100. It's coming. So that 37% isn't choosing. And so I wanted that entire setup. And it's unemotional, everything I just said, that entire setup to establish this next one statement. If you have chosen to not get your shot at this point, June 10th, I'm not concerned about you. And I don't say that with any sort of aggression or middle finger or thumb or nothing. I say that from a practical bottom line standpoint. You're an adult. You made your choice. I'm not going to be concerned about this anymore. And so that was my motivation for the, I think it's a mistake. If you step onto, and we'll just drop Virginia Tech, boom, you're on a Virginia Tech game. Because I actually saw a quote from their AD last night. Looking forward to 100% capacity at Lane Stadium. And you should, because that place is fun. Florida State, Clemson, Virginia Tech. Three places in the ACC that I have most consistently seen, and ACC fans going to lose his mind, or her mind. I have most consistently seen SEC environments. And so when you're talking about stepping onto campus, I'm going to a Virginia Tech game, if you see sanitizer stations and masks being handed out and big protocol signs and everything, it's a trip back in time and not a good one, man. Your trip back in time in Blacksburg, you want to involve Michael Vick. You don't want to involve last fall or the last year or anything to do with it. It's a mistake, man. I said there's only two groups, and one of them has fully chosen.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
And anything that makes my college football world look more like 2019 than 2020... Gimme, 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 and the return of the everybody's got a different name. Alliteration plays well on these things, but everybody's got a different name for the little coaches tour around the South. You pick the three or four or six most populous areas for your fan base and alumni, and you hit the road, man. And the Rebel road trip last night, Lane Kiffin was out talking. Mike Leach, I believe, was in Memphis last night and on the Mississippi State version of that. The Big Orange Caravan's out there. Brian Harsin's going to be hitting the road. Kirby Smart's going to be in Macon and Albany. You go all of these places because that's what you did every single June, July up until last year. And so there's a chance to go pay like $28 and have some fried chicken and green beans and mashed potatoes. And the big thing is the Q&A with the coach. I want to welcome on right now, good friend of the program from ESPN Jackson. It is Jake Wimberly. Jake, brother, how are you today?
Chuck, I'm good. I call that the rubber chicken circuit that you refer to. Yep. That's what I call it.
And it's the same program. I'm lucky enough, I get asked to host some of these things sometimes. It's the same thing every time. The host that nobody wants to hear from gets up there and gives some comments. Then you introduce the coach, and then everybody wants the Q&A with the coach so they can go to work the next day. You know, I asked Coach last night, Coach who? Coach Kiffin. So right. That's really what they want. And like I said, almost nothing important ever comes out of these, but I just love that it's back.
No, I do too. I mean, I agree totally with what you said, and you're coming back there to the show that, hey, anything like 2019 is I'm good for it. So, I mean, if that means, you know, Q&As with coaches at luncheons and you know, golf events or whatever that may be, I'm all for getting back to, you know, a normal type of football season.
All right, so let's talk about what happened with – it's not the normal time of year for coaching, firing, and hirings and all. And we've seen that actually a couple of places, LSU, Ole Miss as well. What happened with the old offensive line coach?
Well, you know, from everything that we've heard from Oxford, that there was just a butting of heads. You know, there's a butting of heads, but, you know, maybe as far as the way things ought to have been done. And look, hey, Lane Kiffin, he calls the shots. That's his offense, and he is, you know, he's going to be the ultimate decision maker there. So from everything that we've gotten, and literally we were kind of put to the stop from several people up there and said, hey, they just did not get along.
Yeah.
It was a difference of opinion, and they decided to go, you know, part ways and go elsewhere, and that's looks like what they did. And as you said, I mean, it looks like several programs have done that, especially along the offensive front in the SEC here over the last, you know, 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, and like, by the way, everybody else I asked off the air when I texted, it was basically the same thing. It was like, didn't get along, and he's the head coach. And I've always said, you know, the boss is the boss. That's the one thing that you've got to establish there. Continuing with Jake Wimberly again from ESPN Jackson. We'll talk State in just a minute, but one more thing about Ole Miss. Now that it's been, I don't know, 6 weeks or so, 7 weeks since spring, have you percolated? Have you been able to marinate on John Rhys Plumlee? And maybe you have a different feeling about him. What's your thought about him and his role with the football team going forward?
You know, from everybody I've talked to up there, and it, I did not think, you know, John Rhys Plumlee would have stayed at Ole Miss, because Everybody said originally, hey, he wants to be a quarterback. He feels like he's a Southeastern Conference quarterback, a Division I quarterback. But obviously on that baseball run with Ole Miss, headed to Arizona, they're out there today getting ready to play tomorrow. But he'll looks like that he's going to come in, and he will probably play a slot receiver. He'll be a guy. And look, everybody loves to throw the Taysom Hill name around, you know, about the dual threat player. But I think that's what you'll probably see from him, a guy that'll line up in the slot. He's a guy that'll probably get the ball in the backfield a little bit, and he'll probably line up in certain down and distance quarterback situations. So Utility player would probably be the best way to describe what he's going to do for this team. And look, they need playmakers. They've got playmakers, but anytime you've got a playmaker like John Rhys Plumlee on your roster, you need to try to get him the ball in space at some point. And I think Kiffin, I think what you'll see is he has done a remarkable job over his career doing that. And I don't know that they'll run the offense necessarily, you know, from Matt Corral to John Rhys Plumlee, but I think you'll see him have, you know, a set of plays that he will touch the football this year.
Let's switch to Mississippi State, and as impressed as I was, and I got a little hoodwinked in week one, I was like, oh, okay. But as impressed as that was, I did remind people, I was like later in the year when the interceptions came, like the next week, and there were some inconsistencies with the offense, I was like, folks, that was year seven at Washington State. That's something that you and I have talked about. But another challenge just the great difference in offense from one year to another is the youth on the Mississippi State team, especially going from a guy like KJ Costello, who's smart enough to stay at Stanford 5 years, to a freshman taking snaps. So it was a really, really young team trying to make that adjustment offensively as well, wasn't it?
It is absolutely a young team. As a matter of fact, just the other night, like a lot of us, I keep this out, the SEC Network on, and Mississippi State spring game happened to be on. So I sat there and watched 20 minutes of it just to go back through it. And I had forgotten how young that team actually was offensively last year. When you're talking about freshman running backs after Kylin Hill left, freshman wide receivers, freshman quarterback. So they're going to be a year older this year. They've gotten more snaps, obviously spring practice, and you're going to see, I think, that offense look a little more crisp. It's going to look much better. Now, you know, how does that translate to touchdowns and yardage and wins? That's yet to be determined, but extremely young last year. And for all intents and purposes, we'll still be a younger offense in the SEC in 2021.
Yeah, and everybody that I talk to, because, you know, you always start with quarterback, and, of course, when you start a freshman, you're like, all right, well, we don't like playing freshmen, but at least we take some lumps and, you know, building blocks. Everybody I talk to about 2021 in Starkville says, and don't count out the kid from Southern Miss, Jack Abraham, who's from a lot more places than just Hattiesburg, but the transfer quarterback with one more go-round, everybody mentions him. Why is that?
He just throws the football well. You know, he's not a guy that's going to take the top off of defense. He's not going to be explosive. You know, he's not a Matt Corral, for instance. He's not a JT Daniels, but he's a guy that can distribute the football. He's a guy that comes from a football family. He understands how to throw it. And Mike Leach wants a guy that can, you know, can move the chains. And I think that's what you get with him. And look, this is good for Will Rogers. This is good for that quarterback room. Mike Leach is going to continue to build that depth in that quarterback room. Got a big, you know, guy coming in this summer from Texas high school football, four-star quarterback. He'll add some depth to that quarterback room. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, and I've gotten this question several times over the last month or two on our show is, hey, will Jack Abraham take the job from Will Rogers? I don't think that he will, but competition is a wonderful thing. And, you know, if Will Rogers does, you know, have a sophomore slump of sorts, at least they got a guy that's got, you know, 3-4 years worth of experience in college football.
I don't see Jaquavius Marks turning into, you know, like a Darren McFadden, you know, workload-wise, but he's got a big role, man. That is an exciting, fun-looking kid. Tell me what the perfect 2021 for Jaquavius Marks workload and production looks like.
Oh, but, you know, workload and production, I think you got to look at a guy like, I think his name was Max Borgi at Washington State that Mike Leach had. That, you know, just a guy, and that's one of the things a lot of people talk about, you know, this offense not working last year because, you know, people rush three and drop eight. And Mike Leach said, look, we've seen this for 20 years. This is nothing new. The problem is we couldn't run the football when we needed to run the football. And I think what you're going to see is you're going to see a better workload out of the running backs. I think you're going to see better production, which will pull that defense, you know, out of that cloud coverage and to, you know, force them to bring a guy up and run support. So, yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy that, you know, can catch the football and a lot of check downs. And somebody said this yesterday when they called the show. They said, hey, you know, Will Rogers had a high completion percentage, but there's a lot of check downs. The check downs in that offense actually are a big part of that offense. So you want to be able to distribute the football and turn, you know, short games into long games. And I think that he'll do that. And look, I think you'll see that running back room. It'll be a deeper unit and a more effective unit for Mike Leach this year.
I think that anybody outside of a Mississippi State fan listening right now, I'm going to say the name Zach Arnett. And like, if somebody just did that, like dog ear perked up, I know that name. I bet you they can't tell you where he coaches, but they heard that name because he was probably mentioned for, you know, quote, bigger jobs this offseason, because I thought last year what he did, man, he dialed it up last year. Confusion, some pressure. He had good talent, I thought. But I was really impressed with the overall job of the defense last year, most Saturdays.
No, I think it was a much better job than most people anticipated than what he could do. I mean, a lot of people kind of, you know, I say a lot, some frowned on it, said, look, a guy that comes from the West Coast, he came out of San Diego State, you know, Rocky Long prodigy, but he did a really good job in the Southeastern Conference. And this defense isn't a defense, I think, that, you know, coming off the bus, they're not going to intimidate you. You're not going to be scared by them, but a very salty bunch. They play very fundamental football, and I know that's cliche. A lot of people like to talk about fundamentals, but they're fundamentally sound. They've got some playmakers. Transfer comes in from Central Florida, had a pretty good spring, expected to play on the edge. So he's a guy that understands how to coach defense and how to do it in a modern era of football where, you know, people are throwing and pitching and catching from sideline to sideline. He's a good one, and Mississippi State's fortunate to have him as the defensive coordinator.
I've been kind of taking informal polls. This, you know, not scientific at all, but like LSU rolls in like week 4 or 5. All right, there's going to be 60,000 at Davis Wade, and they're going to be shoulder to shoulder, tank tops, sweating on each other, you know, whatever, high fiving. What about everything that's not going to the game? What about the social, the tailgating, and all that? Do you expect that will be 100% around Starkville in the game day environment as well? The Grove in Oxford, the same thing. Is it going to look like 2019?
I think it'll look close. You know, I know Ole Miss just put out a statement 10 days ago, I believe, that the Grove was going to be fully functional and they were going to, you know, basically open the thing back up. I know the Junction's going to do the same thing. And, Chuck, I would say this. Look at the Super Regional this coming up weekend in Starkville between Mississippi State and Notre Dame. And I expect, and a lot of people do, you know, people are calling here asking for tickets. They're looking for tickets everywhere. If that thing is a madhouse, 15,000 people in Starkville, then absolutely. And they'll put 15-plus in that place this weekend if they can do it. It'll be packed out this year, you know, all things considering, absolutely.
Yeah, you know what, the thing about it, you're talking baseball. That's not just because, well, there's a lot of Catholics everywhere. No, it's a giant game. Everybody, no matter what the sport is, when they come calling, it's the biggest game for your fan base, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, you say Notre Dame, even in the South, and people are very candid. Either they like them or they do not like them. And, you know, I think Mississippi State fans are excited about the weekend, and I think it's going to be a great weekend in Starkville, regardless of how it turns out. I think people are just glad to be able to get back out and enjoy sports in the Southeastern Conference.
Can I ask you, and this is top of mind, I'm putting you on the spot, and you may say I don't know, but has any Notre Dame athletic team ever played in Starkville? I can't recall one.
If they have, it's going to be baseball. I know it hadn't been football, yeah. Hadn't been basketball. It would have been baseball maybe in a regional in the 90s.
Yeah, it had to have been, yeah. Yeah, something that, where they were told, hey, you're going to Starkville.
Yeah, back when they used to do the old six-team regionals, I want to think they did come down to Starkville. I think that they did back in the 90s. I believe one time they made a trip down.
See, this is why I ask people like you this stuff. Jake, I appreciate it, brother. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate it.
All right, Jake Wimberly again from ESPN Jackson. That's one of those things, it's like when they come calling, and it's not just because you get a supercharged fan base anytime Notre Dame shows up. Supercharged fan base. Part of it is even when in football, you know, it's going to drive that bus a lot, but even when the football team hasn't been an annual national championship contender conversation, at least, I call it the Virginia Tech area. We're Virginia Tech for about 15 years. They never won the title, but you had to talk about, you know, every August, hey, who's going to win the title? Well, this team. Hey, don't forget about Virginia Tech. You always had to say that. That's kind of the spot where maybe they occupy. Appreciate Jake making time and coming on. But that's Notre Dame, and that they're about as, even when they were not at the national championship level, their own boutique network. I mean, they had the original Longhorn Network. It was NBC. It was their network. So that continues to kind of separate them, and the fact that they can play anybody they want, anytime they want. And that used to be, you know who used to do that in college football? Miami and BYU and South Carolina and a lot of really good program. Penn State, independents. They were independent programs. Could play whoever they wanted. And so there wasn't anything that novel about Notre Dame, except that they had Southern Cal every year and they would play Michigan and, you know, bigger teams. And so you would notice that. But the fact that they were independent, that didn't really separate them. Now, oh, you don't load up on non-conference cupcakes and et cetera. So that's what you got there again. And even in baseball, I've seen in basketball, I've seen that when I say it supercharges your fan base, see Notre Dame show up somewhere. It could be Georgia Tech, Washington State. It could be a neutral site, for gosh sakes. Whoever the opponent's fans are, that's the game. Even if you never played them, even if they're not, you're not even in the same conference in the other sports in the ACC, it's just the biggest of big deals, and it continues. And that's one of those things that I kind of like about college sports. And again, Notre Dame, I got no affinity for the Irish. But again, it seems more authentic when they're at the level that they appear to be at right now. All right, we're going to break, wrap up on a Thursday next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
The biggest thing that Shane Beamer has right now, and it's something, Chuck, that doesn't get talked about enough in college football, and that's roster management. I mean, everything they talk about in the NFL is roster management. The reason Nick Saban's so good, Kirby Smart's so good, Jimbo's so good, these guys that have sustained success, is they're able to balance out the roster and they don't lose too much at one point in time, and they're not stubborn enough to be stuck in their own ways.
Chuck Oliver Show, continuing on a Thursday. This is Jay Crane from the J Boy Show, jboyshow.com, former college coach, now podcaster, and does a great job at it as well. I was a guest on his podcast about a month back, actually, and we have now had him on a couple of times. Just good information there. He's talking about Shane Beamer, and I was asking about the turnaround because the public message, and it's what kind of what you say, up-tempo, wide open on offense. And I look, and I was like, well, your best player on the team, I think, is power back, between the tackle sort of guy, and Kevin Harris. Next best player might be your tight end. Marshawn Lloyd is one of the highest rated players you've ever had commit, and a running back. And then you got another transfer running back from Florida State who also might be in the mix this year as one of your four or five best offensive players. So that's what you've got. And a young quarterback who there are at least questions about his ability to throw deep. So I was asking how wide open that South Carolina offense will actually look. I don't think it's going to – I think the play sheet could be on a cocktail napkin. That's what I think. And as you work your way through what is going to be a very challenging season, because there's some talent there and a lot of it, and it just kind of dots the roster here and there. So, again, it's a challenge. I like Shane Beamer, and he is a good recruiter, and he'll never – you're not going to embarrass your program. There aren't any players in state, and he's got Clemson next door. It's tough. At least whoever the Auburn coach is, like, we got to deal with the monster in Tuscaloosa, but that was really good football in Alabama. And I'm talking, like, numbers-wise as well. It's good enough numbers-wise. You don't have that in South Carolina. So – you know, you're always affected by what's going on across state. In a place like South Carolina, where, as Will Muschamp told us, like, there's 6.5 million people in Atlanta, there's 6 million people in the entire state of South Carolina. So it is a big challenge. All right, so I appreciate Jake coming on. We're going to go ahead and wrap this up with a closing argument.
The King's Closing Arguments, presented by the best closing attorneys in the business, Alexander Shannara and Associates.
I asked three different college football experts same question yesterday. I got the same surprising answer. Who is the most likely Florida Gator on offense to be named first-team All-SEC in December. Not preseason. I'm talking because that would be pure speculation, and at this point, there's nothing you could even justify, and that's true. So I'm saying I'll give you the 12 games. Go prove yourself. Expand on an opinion I already have of you, because if you're on scholarship at Florida, we got some talent. So expand on that opinion into, wow, what a skilled, hardworking, intelligent player who produced this year. And then your first-team All-SEC. On offense, who would that be? Emory Jones? Zach Abelverde, Gainesville Sun, on this here radio show yesterday. I asked him. He said, now, Kyir Elam, he is first-team All-SEC, but he plays in the secondary. Offensively, he says, you know, you really want to say Emory Jones here. And we talked about Jacob Copeland, and we talked about, you know, whoever else. But he said, I asked him, he said Emory Jones. Not on this program. I asked Chris Landry. He said Emory Jones. Then the third, the mystery text from an unnamed individual with some expertise on the program who was listening to what Zach said. And he's like, yeah, he's right. It is Emory. So Emory Jones is more likely to blow past Matt Corral and JT Daniels and others than, for instance, Jacob Copeland is racking up total offense in his new role as Kadarius Light, or any of the offensive linemen having that kind of season. You can go through those position groups too quickly, though. Copeland's a decent choice, but first-team All-SEC at receiver? You're normally going to have a quarterback a little different than Emory Jones, like a pocket guy standing tall, delivering it like Kyle Trask. That's how you make first-team All-SEC at receiver. But he could do it, especially if he is in the Kadarius role. Any of the offensive linemen? Not a likely candidate, not for first-team. And there's so many pretty good, tough running backs that none of them will emerge even on most individual Saturdays. Hey, we're going to ride the hot hand. That's not even really how it goes. It's an equal hand throughout the day on a Saturday. While it's a realistic path for Emory Jones, I can give him a season with Dan. While it's a realistic path, it is a narrow one. But it is a great answer in a couple of respects for Florida fans. First, if it was Treyon Harris or Austin Appleby or what, not one person would have said Gator quarterback for his or her answer. So Emory has enough talent that it's at least something you can realistically work out happening in your mind. And it's a monster commentary on Dan Mullen and what he can dial up with an athletic, skilled dual threat at that position. So it really is a great answer. And it's the, for Florida fans, it's the best answer you could get. And I got it from all three guys, that the potential is it's Emory Jones. We'll see, he and Dan Mullen, what it looks like. But I was surprised by it, but it actually is the answer now that you kind of step back and kind of percolate a little bit. Makes a lot of sense. All right, wraps it up on a Thursday. Appreciate everybody coming in for the program today. Give me 22 hours. I will recharge those batteries. We'll be back with more college football conversation right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart, and there needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and in Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.